Podcast 28, An Armistice Day Remembrance, Some Thoughts on a Christian Perspective on War. The Gospel passage for today's podcast is John chapter 15, verses 9 to 17. To start this short reflection, I'd like to read a poem called In Flanders Fields by John McCrae, and it's speaking about World War I. In Flanders fields the poppies blow, between the crosses row on row that mark our place. And in the sky the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. So this short poem reminds us about the tragedy, really, of World War I in particular, and all world wars, and wars in general. In the courtyard outside the church, we have a red climbing rose which is blooming at the moment, which is a beautiful memorial to those who have died in war. In John's Gospel, in John 15:13, Jesus makes this declaration: greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Now, in the context of John's Gospel, it is clear that Jesus is speaking about his sacrifice on the cross for all mankind. This declaration is repeated and reinforced by other New Testament documents. In the epistle passage we read today, 1 John 3:16 to 24, John states that we, that is Christians, ought to lay down our lives for each other, in other words, our fellow Christians. He then goes on to say that we should share our material possessions with our needy fellow believers as a practical example of how we lay down our lives for one another. So laying down our lives doesn't have to literally mean dying for each other. It can be as simple as putting ourselves out for each other. For example, mowing someone's lawn for them when they're not well and can't do it for themselves. Let's keep on doing that kind of laying down our lives for each other. It may not be a sacrifice like those made by some during wartime, but it is still important. But what does God think of World War I, or Gallipoli, or war in general? Should Christians be active participants in war? Should a Christian response to war be to identify ourselves as pacifists or conscientious objectors? Is there such a thing as a just war? And this is not just an academic exercise. Many of us have relatives who were injured or died in conflicts in the last 100 years. And Gallipoli, as an example of a landmark conflict for New Zealand, was one of those conflicts. 207 men from Hamilton died at Gallipoli. In my family, my Uncle Noel went to Italy and fought with the New Zealand forces there in World War II. He was foraging for tomatoes in a garden when unfortunately he stood on a mine that had been laid there as a booby trap. The mine blew off one foot and the lower part of his left leg and severely damaged the other leg. Uncle Noel was invalided out and sent back to New Zealand as a war casualty, and spent the rest of his time sheep farming in the hill country near Gisborne. And in World War I, one of my Maori relatives, William Bloomfield, was a fighter pilot flying the FE-2B, the infamous Dawdling death trap, as the pilots called it. So wars happen in the world with monotonous regularity, part of our inheritance as a fallen creation. Some Christians have come to think that in some cases, war is a necessary evil which must be entered into in order that a greater evil might not be triumphant. The Christian Church has pondered this question for many centuries, and two responses have emerged. One view is the doctrine around the concept of a just war. This doctrine was first outlined by St. Augustine in the late 4th century, and also elaborated by St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century, and it is a part of the Catholic Church doctrine today. The other Christian response to war has been pacifism or conscientious objection. A pacifist is someone who believes that under no circumstances is war justified. As the Sermon on the Mount says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Early church fathers such as Origen in the 2nd century AD and Tertullian in the 3rd century AD supported this view. Tertullian quotes the example from Scripture where Peter attempted to defend Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane by striking out with a sword. Jesus halted him, forbidding him to take up the sword against those attackers. Jesus tells Peter in that incident that he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. Tertullian and many church fathers saw this as a model for all Christians, that none are given the right to pick up the sword. Particular communities of faith have strongly supported this approach, particularly the Anabaptist Protestant groups, known to us today as Quakers and Mennonites. And the New Zealand Anglican Church has an active pacifist group, the New Zealand branch of the Anglican Pacifist Fellowship. So these are the main two choices that are put before us in relation to Christian participation in war and that different communities of faith support: the just war option and the pacifist conscientious objector option. There is another option for Christians in war. For example, in World War I and World War II, some pacifists refused to serve in any capacity, but some were willing to serve in non-combatant roles such as medical orderlies or ambulance drivers. And for an example of this, see the movie Hacksaw Ridge, which is the story of a young Seventh-day Adventist who chose such a role. Wartime often gives opportunity for acts of self-sacrificing courage. As John 15 says, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." The link to the Bible is the view that soldiers who lay down their lives in war to save their comrades in arms are doing something which is not only heroic, which it undoubtedly is, but similar to Christ's sacrifice on the cross. And I think there is some truth in this. People who lay down their lives unselfishly for others are following Jesus' example, whether it's in the circumstances of war or peace. But I've also come to the conclusion that in a time of war, from a biblical perspective, the most remarkable Christian response is not just to love your comrades, the people fighting alongside you, and to sacrifice your life for them, but to love your enemies. Kemal Atatürk, who was the divisional commander of the Turkish forces at Gallipoli and later became the Prime Minister of Turkey, gave a speech in 1934 about the Allied soldiers he defeated at Gallipoli. And these words are now recorded on the memorial at Ari Burnu on the Gallipoli Peninsula. This is what Atatürk said: "Those heroes who shed their blood and lost their lives, you are now lying in the soil of a friendly country. Therefore, rest in peace. There is no difference between the Johnnies and the Mehmets to us where they lie side by side here in this country of ours. You, the mothers who sent their sons from faraway countries, wipe away your tears. Your sons are now lying in our bosom and are in peace. After having lost their lives on this land, they have become our sons as well." That's a remarkable statement, I think, from someone who was a secularist, not a Muslim, but acknowledges that now the soldiers who came to invade his land are his brothers. So you can see trying to develop a biblical perspective on war is no simple thing. I still have more questions than answers. But when I look at Gallipoli and remember the sacrifices of World War I and World War II, I pray two things. Firstly, I pray that God will spare us from another New Zealand generation having to go to war in a global conflict on the scale of the war that Gallipoli was part of. And the second thing I pray is that God will give me the grace to lay down my life for my friends, in both small ways and great ways, both friends who are part of my own community of faith and friends who may be known by another name. Perhaps the name for those other friends might be enemies.